Welcome back to the Barca Breakdown, where we cover how Barca is breaking down, unfortunately. I am your host, Adam. I'm here with my co-host, Yus.
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, as Adam said, awful start breaking us down. But as always, go ahead, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Leave us a review on iTunes. Follow us on Spotify, at Barca Breakdown. Again,
let us know all your comments. You know, we love when you guys give us reviews or message us and, you know, queue up some good conversations. A few of you guys DM us a lot, and we really appreciate it. Well, let's get into it, Yus. Where do we even start with this week, right? I mean, I think the first bad news, the biggest one for me personally, was Dembouz picked up a new injury in training. You know, I think when we've been seeing Setien and his team line up with Fati starting every game, we kind of realized that Dembele was going to have a crazy opportunity to come in here and provide us that width. And, you know, with all the 1-2 passing and the different emphasis Setien has placed than Valverde, this was going to be Dembouz's time. And I feel kind of stupid, Yus, because, you know, my brother Yusuf, who's also a Barca fan, has told us so many times about how we shouldn't count on Dembele and how it is a wishful thinking. And every time I just thought, hey, this injury he's going to come back from and show that he is that world-class talent that we bought.
But come on, like, you can't predict something like this. And not to discredit your brother for, you know, possibly calling this whole thing and predicting an awful outcome, but he's a young guy, and I'm like, I'm actually very surprised that he tore his hamstring, right? Like, that's a pretty severe injury, and I thought all this time, you know, he's been out. What has he been doing recovering, and then how does his recovery end up in a complete tear, you know? Like, what's going on?
From my understanding, what happened, and you know, a lot of this is speculative, right? We're going to talk a little bit more about the Abidal-Messi row and the Messi-Stegen fight, and this is all speculative, so we're just giving you guys the best take we have. But I assume it has to be that he just pushed himself too hard too early, right? That the Barca medical team, which, you know, throughout the whole first half of the season, you know, even though Valverde's gone and Setien came in, it's not like all the different pods where we talked about what is the Barca staff doing, how all these calf injuries coming up, right? That medical staff is, you know, still consulting the team, and it just looks like, from my perspective, that he got the okay to train harder than he should have. And then, you know, all the reports in the last few weeks was, okay, he's back in training. We saw the videos. We saw that he was, you know, getting ready to play. And I think he must have just pushed himself too hard too early and led to his injury.
It just sucks because, you know, and we've talked about this, we spent $140 million on this guy. And I like the guy. I love his abilities. And I think he has a promising future. But, like, something like this can set a player back so far, and I don't know. He's out for the whole season. Now Suarez is out for the whole season. We traded Carlos Perez, right? Like, we're falling apart here.
And, you know, like we saw in this game, Piqué got hurt against Bilbao in the Copa quarters, which, you know, threw us off. But before we get into that game, all right, let's cover Abidal and Messi, right? So Abidal came out and gave a 30-minute interview, which just point one is probably a bad idea of a sporting director of a club who just switched coaches. And, you know, there seems to be some turmoil. Probably not the best idea to go and do a 30-minute interview with the press. In it, he basically, I mean, like we prefaced, it's a little bit speculative, but he seemed to say that, you know, that he could tell that the team wasn't working as hard because of the coach and that they weren't enthused working under Valverde, and that essentially that the impetus for the change to put in Setien instead of Valverde or any coach was that the players weren't into it, right? And then Messi came out, and, you know, he came out and posted on Instagram, which is pretty crazy, right? That's probably his biggest platform to speak, and said, you know what, you need to not give these reports about anonymous players, because when you say that, you're basically saying all of us, right? If you want to say something about the players, you need to call them out or speak specifically about them. And then the bigger point from what I got was that, hey, like, you're the technical director. You're the guy who's in charge of making these decisions and communicating with the board and figuring out what's best for the team. And so it did seem a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, that Abidal was basically putting the blame on the players and not manning up to his own decision, which was to, you know, replace the coach.
Sure. And we all know that the players had some strife between, you know, not every player, but there seemed to be, like, Frankie de Jong that seemed to have some kind of mindset where he didn't really mind that Valverde had left, and it was the idea that I'm going to keep working hard, like, let's get this, let's do this, you know, and then other players like Messi and Piqué Suarez, who said, you know, like, oh, I'm sorry to see you go. We hope for the best for you, you know. But
true. The big thing that I saw with a lot of the players was, like, people like Suarez and Messi were, they were saying, hey, you know, it's unfortunate that you left, but you're, like, one of the greatest people we've met. Like, all of them made the point to talk about how much they really respected him as a man, which clearly indicates that, you know, they felt bad, right? I mean, after Liverpool, after Roma, if the players didn't want to get rid of Valverde, it clearly means that Messi, Suarez, Piqué, Busquets, all of the captains and the big voices in the room were saying, you know, our big losses and embarrassment was because of our own play, not necessarily the coach, or else we would have gotten rid of him last summer.
Which makes Abidal's comments worse, right?
True, and we don't need to rehash the whole summer and how, you know, I think we all agree that Valverde should have left in the summer because now we're having Setien kind of come in mid-season with all these injuries, with this depleted squad, and trying to, you know, compete like Barca should for all three trophies. And so, overall, I mean, the thing I kept thinking about that was really interesting to me is, like, Messi, you know, he's a captain, you know, gets some flack for not being the most vocal guy on the pitch, but we've seen throughout the last few years how, you know, he bleeds for this club and this badge and, like, really cares a lot about the team. And as a guy who doesn't like to go out into the press a lot and cause any drama, I just kept thinking about, like, Messi sitting on his couch, like, reading those comments and thinking, like, I need to say something. So much so that he actually typed out a full message and posted on social media. I mean, that's a pretty ginormous step, right? Like,
yeah, he never does stuff like that, really.
For sure, and it could be pretty easy to just say, well, oh, it's a social media post, but for Lionel Messi to do that with his, you know, 120-plus million followers, it was a big step. It seems like since he posted that and since the back and forth kind of happened, they've come to terms and they, you know, are back on good terms, and Abidal won't be leaving anytime soon. But then there was also the report that came out that the big locker room fight last week was between Stegen and Messi, and you know, as two guys who are huge Stegen and Messi fans, what was kind of your take that it was between those two?
Like, what did I think was the issue?
Just in general.
I just think in the bold scheme of things, all the players are frustrated, you know. The training, I'm sure, has, and I think the players have said, is been a little more intense. But with all the injuries and I think all the injuries and, you know, not winning some of these games like against Valencia and then, you know, squeezing by. And I know Stegen didn't play in this game, the Ibiza game, but squeezing by in that game, winning 5-0 and then winning 2-1. It seems like I think there's a lot of feeling between all the players that they need to be better. They need to improve. And maybe the Abidal comments also threw them off and probably caused... That's why I think it's kind of bad for the sporting director to even do an interview and then say things like that, is because then the players may be on their own sides of things too and, you know, argue about some things. But they're both players that I would, you know, I think they're usually great friends and have good communication. So maybe it's just all the things piling up on each other, injuries, people leaving, the squad diminishing, the changing coach. I think everything has just gotten everybody riled up and frustrated.
And to that point, you know, Alba came out today and said, hey, we get so much stuff from the outside. We really need to be together in this time of hard work and issues, and we need to figure out how to band together as a team. I think, you know, two things about what you said. One is I need to check the timeline because I think that issue was maybe before Abidal spoke. I'm not sure. Since it was last week. The other thing I'm thinking is I think this is partially just the media trying to make a big deal out of, you know, a fight in training. I think that with professional athletes at this highest competitive level, like you were saying, throw in all the Suarez injury, Dembele, throw in getting rid of some of the players who we need offensively, like Carlos Perez. You know, I think players just get heated in training. And so I think, you know, if this fight had happened a month ago, which it might have, we never would have heard about it. And I think that part of it is that, you know, the media wants to create a story. They want to get clicks. And so they're making it a bigger thing than it needs to be. But, you know, like you said earlier off the pod, there's always a grain of something there when a fight like this happens. I just hope that the team can come together and figure out these issues. I mean, we'll talk about Bilbao and how whether or not the game was that bad or whether or not, you know, we played well and got unlucky. But, you know, we got a new coach, right? I think everyone needs to take a step back and just kind of breathe and let the new coach go to work and try and create a system that is going to be effective. I know, you know, especially in the Barca consciousness, a lot of people think about when Zidane came to Madrid that first season. He came in the middle and then took them to a Champions League victory. You know, that team was filled with a bunch of players in their prime, a bunch of, you know, insanely talented players. The Barca team has got some older players, right? And, you know, I wouldn't use that phrase insanely talented to describe this squad right now because we're starting a 17-year-old every game, right? As much as Fati Mania is a thing, and I appreciate the Twitter commentator who said, kind of yelled at me, told me, hey, you guys didn't talk about Fati Mania. You know, he's going off. He's getting better, and it seems like he's getting more confident all the time. But, you know, the fact that we're playing a 17-year-old in Copa quarterfinals or in a big game against Valencia in the La Liga shows that, you know, this team is not the team we had 3 years ago. Even though you switched the coach, you have to be realistic and look at, okay, what options do we have off the bench? Who can we start? You know, we couldn't have accounted for Suarez getting hurt or for Dembele getting hurt for even longer, but we kind of got to deal with the cards we have. And so, you know, I think we have to sit back and just kind of be relaxed and understand that this is going to be a season for growing pains. Putting a coach in halfway through the season, as much as Zidane, you know, was able to kind of go off and win, it's not going to be that easy for us, especially because he came in, Setien, at a time when the squad needed rejuvenation.
Well, I just think to talk about, you know, some of these players that have been injured and whatnot and being depleted and having Fati playing, I think a big issue is that we didn't make any purchases in this trade window, and then we also let go of players, right? And I don't really know exactly what, you know, everybody that's making these decisions to get and release players, what they're thinking, right? Like, don't they look at these the squad and say, oh, shoot, you know, we have these injuries. Oh, shoot, we need to fill in this space. Oh, these players are getting old. Maybe we should start looking for someone that can put on we can put on the bench and then sub them in some of these games, you know, get them some playtime, get them familiar, and then like build, right? It doesn't seem like we're building. It seems like we're buying these high purchase priced players like Dembele, and then just expecting, you know, we'll throw him in and then, oh, something bad happens, but we're not going to accommodate once these things continuously happen. And Fati, great. He's 17. He's young. We spent some good money on him. He'll be a good player in the future. But we need to fill some other spaces.
Part of that is Fati came up from the youth, so we didn't really spend money on him. But
true.
I think you're right. At the same time, you know, like if you swap coaches right around the time of the trade deadline, I mean, how much time did Setien really have to experiment with this team to see these issues? And then, you know, like we keep saying, no one could have predicted Dembele getting hurt. And so, you know, I'm sure that the board thought, well, we'll have Dembele back and then we'll have Griezmann, we'll have Messi, we'll have Fati. And they thought that would be sufficient. But, you know, what can we do, right? Like sometimes on this pod, because of how the last 2 years have been, it can be easy to get negative. I think I'm just trying to say, hey, let's just try to take a step back and let the team grow, let them learn. Of course, you know, the big shadow hanging over all of us is that it's hard to do that when Lionel Messi is 32 years old and this is the end of his career and this is not the time where you want to see that happen. But you can't change the past, and so we just have to be, you know, optimistic and hope that the team will get better. And so going into this Bilbao game, like we talked about last weekend, we were pretty worried because we lost at San Mamés in the first game of the season. We're coming back, and we hadn't looked, you know, too good. Like you were alluding to earlier, Valencia, we lost. Ibiza, we barely squeaked by. So let's get into the lineup today. So we had Alba, Lenglet, Piqué, Semedo. Then we had De Jong, Busquets, Rakitic, and then Fati, Messi, and Sergio Roberto. So what did you think when you saw that lineup? Because I know you're always talking about how much you hate seeing Semedo and Roberto on the same side.
One of the worst things I can, like from the Valverde era, that was one of the worst things I like really thought about. I almost feel like Setien should know this, not to play these two before. I think he's done it in another game, and I don't think it worked then. I don't think it works now. I just think the Semedo-Roberto combo doesn't provide enough width, doesn't create space, and they don't have like the best connection to create plays moving forward, most of the time when I see the right side, it's either just one of them is doing something. It doesn't seem like Semedo has a connection with Roberto, which will connect to the midfield or connect to the forwards or anything like that. So I think when I first saw that, I was like, oh no, like this is going to be bad. And then
true.
I also thought,
I think it's funny because, you know, on the one hand, we have two coaches in a row who like putting Sergio Roberto up in that right wing spot. But like you're saying, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into the calculus of how we line up, right? I mean, on the one hand, Sergio Roberto is an experienced player. We're playing against Bilbao, who aren't the world beaters and a team that Barca should beat. At the same time, Roberto is just such a safe and kind of boring option up front as the right wing. And like, if I think about the times where Sergio Roberto in that position thrived, it was always because he was connecting with Luis Suarez, right? Mm-hmm. And so without Suarez up front for Roberto to get crosses into, to give him chances to, you know, I think about that header he had against Real Madrid to score a goal that was from a nice Roberto cross. I think of Roberto as a good offensive force to combine with Suarez, but not really with Messi or Fati. You know, it's hard to say with Griezmann because we haven't really seen those two combine too much. So I was pretty worried about that. And then, I mean, we spent the whole podcast, last pod, talking about how we've just come to realize that Arturo Vidal is a quintessential part of our team. Like, you know, there's people who are going to listen to this pod who say, oh my God, like, how could these guys say that? Vidal is not the player we need. He doesn't have that passing ability. But he brings a physical presence and, like, a willingness to score that no one else does. And, you know, we talked about last week, these players just don't seem like they're fully into the games trying to win it all the time. Everything looks lethargic and there's slow decision making. And Arturo Vidal provides that spark that we really need, right? And so I was pretty disappointed to see him not start. You know, as we go and talk about the game more, PK getting hurt, I think, was what, you know, us having to sub in Umtiti for PK was the reason we didn't end up seeing Vidal. But regardless, I mean, Vidal should have been subbed in before Arthur, in my opinion, if not starting this game.
Well, I don't think, you know, that I agree with you. But I don't think that wouldn't have been too much of an issue if we started Griezmann, one, and then not had Roberto, even if we put Griezmann on the right side or something, I don't know. But we probably wouldn't have had to have that issue. And then I also thought that, to touch on your point of, you know, the midfield being lethargic and how Vidal adds to that, and I can give you a perfect example of today's game where, you know, that same situation happened. Rakitic passes the ball to Messi. Messi almost looks to Rakitic like, go forward. I'm going to pass you the ball. So Messi shoots a forward pass. Rakitic doesn't respond until the ball is like halfway from Messi to him. And then he responds and it's too late. And then he loses the possession of the ball. It's sloppy. It's lazy. It doesn't create offense. When balls are coming back to you, you know, the one touch passes are meant to create space and move forward. Someone like Vidal is someone who does that. And I see that game to game. You know, he'll do those one touch passes with Messi or whoever else. And he'll even go and push forward and try to get headers. That's the issue I have with the midfield in today's game, was a lack of moving the ball forward and lack of connection with the forwards. The only person that I saw really do that was Arthur, who got subbed in the second half. Sure. But overall, I agree with you completely. Like, our midfield needs to really be activated in some of these times. I think that,
I mean, I think it just comes down, man. We, like, Rakitic is just not good enough to start in these games anymore, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, even you, Yus, who kind of started watching Barca a little bit later, like, that 14-15 season Rakitic, when we won the treble, was so good and so dynamic, so offensive-minded. Whether it's because he's gotten older and slower or because Valverde kind of changed his position and made him, like, kind of neutered his offensive output, he's just not the player we need for these games. And I don't know how many times we can put him out there and then just say, wow, he was bad, right? I mean, if we were to take a poll or just, like, talk between each other and try to figure out, hey, when was the last game Ivan Rakitic played and you were like, wow, that was one of the best players in the game? I honestly couldn't name one.
On Barcelona, right? Though.
Yeah, right? I couldn't name one, right? Like, when was the last time Rakitic was an excellent player? Like, even with that comment, I feel like you're alluding to the World Cup. Dude, that was, 2 years
ago?
That's
why I asked. Yeah.
That was 2 years ago, right? So, like, if you're saying that a player's best... Yeah, if you're saying a player's best performance was 2 years ago, right? I mean, it's just clear he shouldn't be playing.
Well...
Now, it's kind of interesting because a lot of our talk about this game is very negative, which is one way to view it, and it's the way I lean to more. On another hand, right, without going minute by minute for the game here, there were two clear chances in the second half Messi and Griezmann didn't put away, And sure. I think overall you have to say we were the better team. They scored a 93rd minute goal. That was beautiful. A little bit lucky, but it was beautiful. And they beat us in the most crushing way possible. I think some people would have the analysis that, hey, this is a lot of progress, right? Like, we looked better away in the second half and this whole game than we have most away games in the last year. So it's kind of a hard thing for me to understand, because on one hand, I do blame Setien, and I think that not starting Vidal and then starting Sergio Roberto up top was difficult. You know, did he have another option besides Sergio Roberto? It was Griezmann. And why he didn't play Griezmann, I mean, you know, it kind of sucks. We only have those three players, Messi, Griezmann, Fati, really to play up front. Messi is clearly like feeling that thigh injury. We didn't really talk about that yet, but he reports he's been dealing with a thigh injury. We can't really rest Lionel Messi. We're hardly winning games without him, so we really need him to play. And then Fati's 17, so we need to rest these guys anytime we can. Maybe he assumed that Bilbao away would be a game to do it. I mean, I think from all of us who've watched Barca against Bilbao, especially at San Mamés, that's not necessarily the game to do it. On the other hand, though, right, if Messi and Griezmann put away those two chances, we win. You know, I think we do need to shout out Simone, the goalie for Bilbao. True. He had a game of a lifetime, which, you know, every goalie seems to have against Barca. So, yeah, where do you stand? I mean, do you place, you know, are you one of the guys who thinks that, hey, Setien, you know, lined up his team wrong? We haven't talked yet, but Frankie de Jong, it's kind of confusing how we're playing him, right, at Ajax. It seemed like he was always in a double pivot, and he was always looking forward to, with the ball, to pass it and try to get offense created. It seems like Setien is playing him more of like a box-to-box midfielder, and at times playing him almost up front, running to make runs to get the ball and score, which I don't think is his game. But sorry, that was a little bit long-winded. Do you think that, you know, more the blame here is on Setien, or do you think more the blame is on the players for just not putting away chances and not playing well enough?
It's kind of a rough question, because I think in this situation that both things are true. And the reason I say that is because I think Setien could have made clear decisions on his lineup to better the game. And I think that those decisions would have made the game... I think that it would have given us a higher chance of scoring or winning this game. Well, it's hard to say that necessarily, because we had these good opportunities, like you're saying, that could have won the game. I do blame the players, and I'll say that because I think the shots by Messi and Griezmann and even Fati earlier in the game were shots that, you know, they were pretty decent shots, but I think they were all not that well placed. I don't think there was very much power behind those balls. I think they were all low to the ground. Messi didn't look so great on the free kick. He seemed very frustrated. All the players seemed very frustrated. I think that frustration carried over into the play of today's game, and that's why I'm saying that I think that it's not just Setien to blame here. I think the players had an internal frustration going on with all the yellow cards, the fouls. Messi, even at he got a yellow today with, I think, a foul that was deserved to be a yellow. And I think Alba, you know, complaining to the referee, even though I don't think the referee did a great job.
No, Hernandez was awful today.
Yeah. I think Alba just made some, you know, the frustration was leaking out of him, and that just turned into the game, and his performance suffered today, I think.
Here's a question I have, or a thought, I guess. It did seem, I don't know, like, and I think this, like, if we're feeling this or if I'm feeling this, it's permeating to the players, but there's just something about cup, away games, elimination, winner take all, where, I don't know, I just felt the whole time I kind of dreaded it. I just thought, like, the way the players were playing, like, the attitude they had, the energy they had, it almost seemed like it was a foretold destiny that we would lose the game. Because even though that second half, it did look exciting and we did create some chances, I don't know, I just had this inner feeling, like, this reminds me of the two things we talk about way too much on this podcast, Anfield and Roma. I just kind of felt like a cloud was hanging over the entire game and that we were destined to lose. Did you get that vibe at all?
I think I felt that from all the things that were occurring before this game. You know, I think that we lost to like I've said this already multiple times. We squeezed by Ibiza. We lost to Valencia. We lost to Bilbao in the past. We know San Mamés is a hard place to play. The whole strife between the Abidal and Messi and all these injuries and everything, I just think that is the shadow that was hanging around everything, just like waiting. I do want to shine a light on the fact that with this loss, and we're getting knocked out of the Copa del Rey for the first time. I don't know when. I know the last 2 years we made it to the finals at least, and we have many trophies from it in the last 10 years. But
I mean, last 5 years, I think we've been in the final.
5 years?
Won four of them.
Yeah, 5 years. Then I think this will almost hopefully give us a chance to put our energy into the other competitions. As we see in league, we're down, I think, 3 points. And then in Champions League, we need to focus because last 2 years have been awful. Although...
True, but I just feel like, I mean, I know what you're saying. And with our squad so thin, being out of all competitions is probably good. But,
yeah,
you know, not I'm not saying you're a loser, Yus, but I just feel like that's kind of a loser mentality. Because
well, no, it's like, already happened.
I mean, think about it, though. Like, okay, we're saying we wouldn't have that many games, right? Look at the four teams left. All those teams are not very good, even though we lost to Bilbao, of course. But if we get through this game, we have... A two-leg semifinal and then a final. Three more games, right? So
well,
on one hand, I totally respect what you're saying, and like it will help us not have to, you know, prepare for those midweek Copa games that can, you know, drain the players and leave us with little rest, especially with, and you know, as a bigger point, I don't know if we should really even be talking about the Champions League because with this squad, I don't think any of us really feel very confident, especially considering Liverpool are 23 points up in the Premier League, so before every big Champions League game, they're just going to rest their entire squad. But I see what you're saying at the same time. I mean, we pushed through this game, and the final is right in our grasp.
Yeah. No, I understand.
You know, before we kind of wrap up the game, a few things I want to mention. One is Jordi Alba is just not cutting it. Ever since Anfield, he's just been not very good. Like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I would have said he's the best left back in the world. He's not doing well. You know, Setien was Firpo's coach at Betis when he was in his best form, so I'm hoping to see Firpo at least come in and give some challenge to Alba. But, you know, if we go back to the first podcast when we were playing Napoli and Chelsea in the U.S. and Japan in the preseason, we were all hyped. We got Firpo. We got De Jong. You know, we got players in who are going to be able to challenge and give our starters, you know, give them some hell and make them have to work to keep their starting spot. And we haven't seen it at all. And with the way Jordi Alba is playing, I need to see Firpo start the next game.
The question is, will he, right? Setien seems to be playing some interesting lineups that I don't necessarily agree with. And, I mean, I'm sure you don't as well. And he has have a tendency to play some younger players, though. So it's possible.
True. Do you have any final thoughts of the game?
No, I mean, I think we covered everything. Honestly, it's a hard loss, you know, but I think that this is another stepping stone, hopefully to, you know, I hope the team kind of gets their stuff together. Seems to, I know they made those comments about the team, backing each other up. And I just hope this is a game that kind of leads them into that pathway. And I hope that, the next game against Batiste.
Sure, I know. That's what's scary is we have Batiste in 3 days away. Thankfully, they're not doing super hot in La Liga. They only have 28 points, and they've allowed more goals than they've scored. Hopefully, the team will come together, and we will see a good performance. Do you have any predictions? It's an away game. If you tally all of our predictions this year, we predict way too many goals and way too optimistic. But let's try it again, Yus. What do you think about the Batiste game? What's your prediction?
I'm just going to go, this is hard. I know I'm going to underscore it, but I'll just go 2-0.
Okay, I think I'm going to predict a 2-1 victory. You know, Setien's returning to his former club. I think the players hopefully will be motivated, especially after this hard week. I just hope to see them come together and do well. So thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. You know, again, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at Barca Breakdown, or Facebook. Leave us a review. Let us hear what you guys want to hear more on the pod. If you have any questions you want us to address, shout us out, and we will do so. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. See you later.